This is episode 152 of Extraordinary Women Radio. Welcome to Extraordinary Women Radio. I am your host, Cami Gellner. Women are being called to lead with voice, vitality, and vigor. Each week, join me for wisdom-filled interviews with extraordinary women living out loud and making a difference in our world. Their stories will uplift, inspire, and spark your own purpose-driven journey. Hello, my extraordinary women friends. Today, I'm thrilled to introduce you to my friend, Grace Lanny. We recorded this interview back in mid-March at a time when I thought I would be headed to Austin to speak this month at the eWomen Network chapter that Grace is the managing director for. Little did we know that our world would shift so much in 1 month. It was such an honor to have this great conversation with Grace around branding. And in the midst of this interview, we discovered how our worlds paralleled in our pre-entrepreneurial world of technology. Grace has been inspiring her clients to discover their personal brand for business success for many years. She is equally likely to be seen in a boardroom or coffee shop listening deeply to a person's goals while connecting to what makes them tick. Ever the entrepreneur, Grace is continually engaging the cutting edge of personal branding. She was recently referred by William Aruda, Forbes columnist on personal branding, to lead a two-hour workshop at the 2019 International Career Thought Leaders Conference on the personal branding dynamics of the gig economy. I am thrilled to introduce you to my friend, Grace Lanny, of All About That Brand. Well, welcome to Extraordinary Women Radio, Grace.
Well, thank you so much for inviting me to be here, Ms. Cam.
Yes, you bet. It's so great to have you join us. And I am looking forward to digging into your story here. You were the CEO of a venture funding software startup in the early 2000s, and you were one of only two women who funded to the million-dollar level in Austin at that time. Tell us a little bit about the journey that you went to getting to become the CEO, to raising those dollars. Tell us more about that.
Wow, that's a big question, Cami. You know, I landed in Austin 20 years ago. I was recruited by a public company, which for me at the time was, very big deal, you know, in my young 30s. And I really wanted to take the world by storm. I was on the path to become a CEO. And I thought, okay, I'm going to be VP of professional services and sales. What a great entree.
Right. A good way to open the door.
Yes, absolutely. And I could learn both sides of the fence that I had been playing on historically in my career. So, you know, and it was my first software.
Right. What kind of companies had you been at before?
Prior, I was in California at a little tiny company that had only four people, and they were buying used networking equipment, refurbishing it, and selling it again.
Okay.
And I helped them grow to 35 in a year. And I said, okay, it's time to get us online. And they're like, we don't think this internet thing is going to take off.
It's not going to stick around, huh?
Yeah. Well, they didn't figure anyone would buy a router online. So, you know, I'll give them
a little grace
there, no pun intended, and say, you know, they just didn't think that people would be buying high dollar items online. You know, that was long before you could buy a car and houses and, you know, pretty much anything you want and any denomination that you want online. And they really didn't feel it was going to happen. And so I reached out to the people that I knew and asked them where I should go next. And, you know, I was introduced to this CEO of this public company. It was super exciting. Shopping carts were not a thing. And they were one of the very first. They weren't the first. Big Step was the one in Silicon Valley. And Austin's known as the Silicon Hills.
Mm-hmm.
So it was the second one. Second one in Step actually had strategically partnered with one organization to use their product while they were building what they believed the next big thing would be. And so I was super excited. A lot of things to share over a glass of wine.
Yes.
The punchline, you know, how did I become a CEO? I went to work one day 2 months after I got in the seat as the VP, and the doors were chained to our building.
So they were literally chained shut.
Literally chained, like, you know, you're not getting in.
This is not a day that anything's going to happen in that office.
And, you know, I'm starting to do inventory of all the things at my desk, like things that my kids made for me. They were very little at the time. Aww. They were 6 and 4, and, you know, pictures of them, and my personal computer was in there. And I knew that who the firm was that we rented the space from. And so I went and I knocked on the door of the CFO and I said, and she was a woman. Her name's Tommy.
Okay.
And I said, Tommy, I don't know what's happened. And she said, sit down, honey. And she just gave me an earful and walked me eventually into the space so I could get my things, and then chained it back up, and on I went. And yeah,
So you moved to Austin, and then 2 months later,
that was it. And I didn't really know anybody because I was running full steam. We were getting ready to do, you know, a national show, basically all the big cities, all the NFL cities, to launch the shopping cart business. And, you know, they had done a reverse merger into a public shell. And for those who may or may not know, they actually, you know, the street puts a business onto the pink sheets and somebody can buy into that and take it public again. And so it was a very small amount that they did that with, and they had no business.
Oh, interesting.
All that money without revenue. Yeah. I learned so much. I got my MBA, half of my MBA through that process, and the other half raising money. So yeah.
Love that.
You know, and I didn't intend to be an entrepreneur. I didn't intend to be a CEO, but I became initially an entrepreneur, a consultant, calling people saying, hey, this is what happened to me. Everybody would say, oh my gosh, that's amazing, wild, unbelievable. And I'd say, okay, what projects do you have on the bench that I can help with? Something that you don't have the time or people or attention for, you know, what are the things you really want to get done, but you need another smart person. And 6 months later, I had a thriving consulting business. And
just, you know, by getting out there and knocking on doors and having conversations with people,
yeah,
it really opened it up.
Telling the story, telling them I wanted to work, right? You know, they knew me, they knew my history, and, you know, the market was very fluid in that time. You know, it was just all over.
So this was early 2000s.
99. Yep. 99. And before the end of 99, that happened. By 2000. I had a book of business.
I worked for a little tech startup at that time as well. We were building some of the early tablets. So, you know, it was a fun time in the tech industry.
Cami Gildner, I didn't know we had that in common.
Yes.
So I was one of the original folks. It in that time, that was before the tablet PC came out.
Yes.
And so you must have been with like Fujitsu or...
A company called Qubit here out of Denver. And David Armitage was the founder of that organization. And he had founded a company called Geographics in the oil and gas industry years prior to that. And I had worked for Geographics, and then he recruited me to go work for him at Qubit. So it was fun. It was a really fun journey.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So the short story here is one of my clients needed a solution to manage their servers between their back office and this new thing called a colocation center. You know, they didn't really exist in the real world for everyday people, right? Colocation was something that big companies did behind, you know, security guards and things.
Right.
And so we designed this RFP for this client, and we started asking around, like, what's the product that we should buy to invest in? And people looked at it and they're like, nobody has this. This is something. And I can remember the first guy writing me a $50,000 check saying, you have something here, go figure it out.
By even looking for the product that didn't exist, it's what started the fundraising for you then.
It was. And, you know, we were heavy in the raise when the market crashed. We took money from a VC that we kind of felt like if we didn't do it now, it wasn't going to happen. We would have to put it on the shelf or maybe, you know, work for one of the companies that gave us letters of intent to say, yep, you build this, we're going to buy it, here's what we'll pay. And venture capital, what a game.
You were one of the first women having these conversations with venture capitalists. How was that?
Yeah. You know, I turned myself into a dude. I dressed differently. I spoke differently. It was all about what's productive.
Right, you know, right.
It was all about getting funded and proving that we could do it.
Do you think that women today have to do that?
No.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. What's shifted?
What's shifted? Great question. So yesterday I gave a talk at Oracle to their women's organization internally. It was a inclusivity and diversity conversation. Mm-hmm. And the first thing I said was, first of all, high five to every woman in this room, because the fact that you're in Austin means that you're leading the charge. You have more opportunity. And the position for women in Austin as it comes to technology, raising money, entrepreneurship is unlike any city I've experienced. Mm. So what's shifted is that I think we were new and the women were so smart that the men just felt that, you know, we were peers. We ran down the street together. And it really wasn't until you got to the high level of money, till you got to the $1 million level, that the old boy Texas thing reared its head. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it was a learning. You know, I had no business raising $2 million. I had no business doing it.
You rolled your sleeves up and did it though, right?
I did. You know, yeah. I can remember I put the whole team around a phone. Now, meanwhile, everybody on the team is working for nothing, for convertible debt. Right. I mean, we all threw in hard.
You believed in what the product was. You believed in what it could be.
Our developers developed the prototype on convertible debt. Our attorney was on convertible debt. Our CPA was on convertible debt. Like, they knew when they wrote the check, like a whole bunch of that money was going to go to all these people who did all that work, and they still put the money in, which is kind of exciting.
Totally, totally. And then you landed the CEO role.
I did for half a second, and then they decided to bring in a marketing guy who had no business running this business. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And the first thing he did was kick my marketing person to the curb, was the person who helped me fund the business to begin with. And I didn't know I could say no, thank you. I didn't really know, like, okay, you gave us the money, so you tell us we have to take this guy in. I didn't know I could say no, thank you.
Right.
And I didn't understand that how to build the key person for that role, right? The person that's coming into our business needs to be able to walk into a co-location center and know exactly what's happening there and how to speak to those people. And, you know, hindsight is 2020. Right. That was the rest of the injection for my MBA right there.
Right. So really going through that element of that person coming in, the evolution of all of that, and just what you could have done differently, or what would you have done differently besides say no?
I think that is the only thing. You know, his salary was the difference between us finishing the product and going to market.
Oh, wow.
And not, if we had just said no, thank you, and said, look, we need to get our first client served, and I'm going to keep this position right now. And what we want to look for is someone who can take us over at this level.
Right. Right. After you'd had the client.
Yeah.
On board.
I learned so much. I learned so much. It was, you know, the experience that I had of raising, I mean, I still get hired to help people build their investor pitch, you know, okay, as a branding person, I'm thinking about that as well.
Right.
But
you get the other side of it too, as well.
Yeah.
Well, I should introduce you to one of my clients, Arzu Zarafshan, who's doing a lot of that work with the new with companies that are raising capital. YouTube would really totally jam on a lot of that.
Awesome. I would love it.
Yeah. So how did the transition from CEO to entrepreneur come about?
How did the re-transition come about? So, you know, let's talk about how the market crashed.
Right.
We didn't have enough money to see us through.
Right.
It's the same thing
that happened to us at that point. Totally, the same thing.
They had promised $2 million. They decided, even though we met all our deliverables, they decided that we weren't the one that they were going to ride. And so they said, no, thank you. We're just not going to release the next tranche of money. And boy, I can remember it. Just talk about a gut kick.
Totally.
I said, you know, what you're doing is not okay. You're not serving us. You're not serving the end client. And we tried to raise the money elsewhere, but it didn't happen. Mm-hmm. And the next position I took, one of my advisors was a guy named Dave Altunian, who founded Motion Computing, one of the very first tablet PCs.
Oh, wow. That's so cool.
Isn't it? So I was, you know, I think employee number 12.
Okay.
And I ran around the country teaching resellers how to use tablets and implement, you know, with their clients. And it was absolutely blissful, you know, first 3 years, you know, just standing in the room. Here's me, here's Intel, here's Microsoft. And we're speaking in San Francisco to thousands of people who just want to touch the thing. They want to put their hands on it. It was amazing.
Mm-hmm. How fun. Yeah. We launched our tablet at CES and 6 months later we were done. So, yeah.
You know, it's all timing, right?
Right.
How much did you learn from that, Tammy?
Oh, so much. And the tablet ended up in Apple's lab. So the Qubit tablet ended up in Apple's lab as one of the pre-models that they built the iPad off of. Yeah, I think they were, you know, those early ones, they picked them all up and then they built off of that. So it was that's one nice thing to think of, right? It contributed to that iPad that we use every day.
You did. We all did. I mean, if you look at the Surface today, the Microsoft Surface, that was the vision for motion. And the technology wasn't there yet. You know, I mean, you could fry an egg on the back of the first one.
Yeah. So, okay. So you're there, you're in the tech space, but there's a place where the whole world of entrepreneur opens up to you again. Tell us that part of it. And then tell us a little bit about what you're doing today.
Yeah. So I was very much torn between the entrepreneurial world and the gravy train, you know, the corporate world. Mm-hmm. You know, I was a multi six-figure employee. I was outside sales. So I had all the flexibility and all the gravy. Mm-hmm. And choosing, you know, when I chose to leave Motion, it wasn't because I didn't love the product. It was because I could see that the iPad was kicking our tail and it was it was time to move. Mm-hmm. And I went back to a software company. They wanted to try bringing their product into healthcare. It was a long ball, so to speak. Mm-hmm. Wasn't clear whether or not that would happen or if people were ready for it. It was a very cool product. In fact, Oracle bought that company. Oh. That's how I got connected with that talk I gave yesterday. And entrepreneurship was in and out, in and out, in and out. And then finally, this woman called me and said, I would like you to be one of our consultant coaches for these executives. And I said, what are you talking about? I'm not a coach. That's silly. Now you look back on that. And I was coaching all the time. I just didn't have that title.
Right.
I didn't have the tag. I didn't have the, you know, ICF designation. Right. Mm-hmm. And so that was learning about personal career management, everything from a resume to interview to career transition. And the market, again, was struggling, and these folks could not get jobs. And really, because these executives would go heads down into their business and they would forget about networking, about positioning themselves as a smart person in that industry or right. in that role. And when it, if the downsize happened and they got let go, or if two companies merged and they were the one who got let go, they had to start all over again to tell their story. And I can remember reading, you know, I read the article, The Brand Called You, 97. It was an old, you know, somewhere in 2001, I read that article. It was in a dog-eared Fast Company magazine. And I read that and popcorn just went off. And
interesting.
I brought that to the team and I said, okay, I think there's something in here for us to do for our executives who are looking for new jobs. And, you know, I can remember standing over the top of the woman who was the marketing manager, begging her to learn WordPress so we could do these one-page websites for these people. And oh my gosh, she now is one of the top website and marketing firms for small businesses here in Austin. And you know, it's just, it's amazing how these things transpire. But
little seeds get planted along the way, right? From that article to the conversation of, you know, please learn to do WordPress and yeah.
And the phrase personal branding really hadn't taken off.
Yes. But what's it mean to you?
What does personal branding mean to me?
Yes.
That's the who you are on Sunday morning.
I love it.
You know, with your, you know, for me, with your hair up in a scrunchie and sipping your coffee and just, you know, drinking in your family and your life. You know, I call it the branding cocktail. You know, you have a personal component. You have a professional component, the one that you kind of wear everywhere when you're doing business. And then if you have a company, right, all about that brand is a corporate brand.
Right.
And if I'm doing a little something on the side, which, you know, every now and again, I play around with some other products and businesses and, you know, they're my side hustles.
Right.
And each one of them has a little different slice. You know, some people believe that if you're an entrepreneur, your business brand is you, that there's no distinction. Mm-hmm. And I'm my philosophy is a little different. And I love understanding those nuances. The engineer in me wants to really dig in and really understand how who they are plays out in those different environments.
And what I'm hearing here is it's not so much just you become a different person. It's just a different aspect of you shines more brightly in different circumstances.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, you're not wearing your fuzzy slippers to work.
Right, right. And I think it's kind of going back to like when you were raising capital in those early days and you put on, you know, you wanted to show up so much like all the men showed up. And that's a little different than knowing who you are and really letting that best light of you come forth in any given circumstance with through a different lens.
You know, that's a maturity exercise. Mm-hmm. You know, I had someone tell me that is one of the things I provide my clients is a snapshot into the next version of themselves. And I try not to see too far in the future, right? Something mm-hmm. that they can lean into and really embrace mm-hmm. versus something that's such a big leap that they can't hold that space for themselves. Mm. Often I'll see it, right? You know, maybe there's some intuition involved. Maybe there's some, you know, just experience and time and grade being around long enough to see someone and what's possible for them. Right. And that's only one little sample, right? You know, there's thousands and thousands of possibilities for that person and who knows what happens and puts them on the journey that's for them.
Right, right. So tell us a little bit about your company today. I know you have a multidimensional platform that really teaches people and companies about personal branding, but tell us kind of the scope of what you do.
Yeah, so the entrepreneur had a consulting firm, sales and marketing consulting, focus on partnerships and channels, which was my corporate world. Mm-hmm. And when it got to about 15, 16, I asked my team, I said, okay, we can only grow as far as I can handle engaging with clients, or we have to hire more people, or we have to go online. What's our mm-hmm. online platform? Mm-hmm. They came back and they said, you're a personal branding expert. And I said, what are you talking about? You know, I just didn't even recognize that. And so I went and I took the certification from William Arruda. He was, and you know, arguably is the number one guy in the personal branding space. He writes for Forbes. He had a full certification program, and going through that with him and with, you know, the gal who wrote Personal Branding for Dummies put me in connection with my people, right? The the folks who were wanting to celebrate the best of their clients. And that was the shift. That's when I created the first ebook called All About That Brand. The name of the platform was something totally different. Nobody paid any attention to the platform, Cammie. They loved the name All About That Brand so much, they would just say that the company was all about that brand. Mm. So I killed it. I killed the original name. It was called The Branding Glass. Okay. Meaning, you know, you think about Alice in Wonderland going down the rabbit hole and figuring out who you really are. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, it was very heady, very, you know, a spiritual moment. But the reality was all about that brand was what people latched onto. And right. So we embraced it. We changed the logo. We used the exact same expression, you know, visually, but we used different words. And we launched the ebook. We took a personal branding course that I was doing kind of VIP mode, and we turned that into an online course. Mm-hmm. I learned about digital marketing as fast as I could, you know, using a platform that had all the components, right? The CRM and all the nitty gritty to make an online platform work. And people bought. People right. were excited. And that was, you know, that was before we even launched the podcast.
Yeah. Yeah. So you had all these pieces and people were saying, okay, they were resonating to it. They were following it. They were saying, yes, this is what we're looking for.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so then you had, let's talk about the podcast, All About That Brand. And you talk about the good, the bad, and the ugly of personal branding and how it really impacts our businesses. What is the good, the bad, and the ugly of personal branding?
You know, what a great question. The good is the best and easiest thing to respond to. So what's the good of personal branding? That's where you get to tell your story in such a way that your personal client wants to do business with you. They seek you out. And it includes kind of a three-dimensional version of you so that what else you love gets to show up. Mm-hmm. So for me, you know, part of my personal brand is the fact that I'm Italian. I, you know, I share recipes. I talk about Italian wine. My husband and I play music together. Oh, by the way, play at the local Italian vineyard. So, you know, my following, my audience knows that being Italian, music and beautiful wine all kind of is part of my groove, right?
Right,
so that's
right.
The good part. The bad, you know, there's only one thing I could put a finger on with bad, and that is, you know, when you're pouring your heart out online, oh my gosh, this just happened to me too. Pouring my heart into a new campaign, I hired a new partner to actually do the emails because I was convinced that my content was broken. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I got an email from this guy that said, shame on you. this is a person who opted into my list. And he said, shame on you for asking me to buy from you.
Ooh.
And I was like, oh my goodness. I mean, I actually wrote, if you follow me on LinkedIn, there's an article out there called Do You Think Like a Gopher? And so it was my whole response to that experience. So when people respond to you and assume that you're trying to do them wrong, that's the bad.
That's the bad. Was it something from the other writer that it wasn't in your voice? It wasn't that the shame on you came from? Tell me a little bit more about that.
I think the way he phrased it, it was less about the fact that it was more of a traditional Dan Kennedy sales letter.
Uh-huh.
And more about the fact that I was offering. So by the way, the opportunity was $297. You know, it wasn't like I was asking for $10 million.
Right.
I was asking for a little bit of money to be part of a co-creation for a new course. Mm-hmm. Right. So it was, you know, it's one of these things where you get to jump in. It's only open for 5 days. Come on in, play if this works for you.
Right. Right.
The guy could have unsubscribed.
Right.
Why did he feel the need to spank me?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But that's kind of the bad, you know, it's like when you get lousy reviews, mm-hmm, or a bad testimonial.
Right.
It's not responding to that. You know, I responded to him in the email. I said, I'm so sorry you felt this way. You opted in on this date. I've opted you out today. You shouldn't receive anything else.
Right. Right.
You know, so I wanted to take the high road. You know, I'm a glass half full kind of gal. I like to take the high road. And, you know, who knows? He might have lost a family member.
You don't know where he's at.
Fell
point.
In his head. You know, I don't know what happened to this guy, but.
And I think that's so important. Like, you mean, whether it's a mail list, whether it's on social media today, it's like, you know, we don't know where any person is on any given moment, and giving them the grace to really be, you know, be within whatever that is, and to let that flow happen or between us.
Yeah. I mean, God bless him. He's right. Got bigger fish to fry, clearly. Right. Of course, the last piece here is the ugly. So what's the ugly? So here's my response to that. You'll have to tell me what you think about this. So the ugliest part about personal branding is bringing up the things that you're vulnerable with.
Mm.
And so when that ugliness comes up, it can feel really, really ugly. Like somebody kicks you in the gut.
Right.
Right. So the response I had to that guy's email may have been, you know, not only bad, but also a little ugly in there. Some of that, you know, like betrayal stuff.
Right.
It's a gut kick. But I'll tell you, if you process it well, that ugly turns into greatness. Mm-hmm. It turns into freedom.
Mm, I love that. I totally love that, Grace. And I can even think of, you know, some emails I've had recently where, if you can just let it move beyond and, you know, show, let it come into your world, but also to let that almost, I want to say deflect, right? To deflect off of us and let our love come back out into the world with that. You know, when somebody's being vulnerable.
I use Brendan Burchard's notebook.
Yep.
And there's a section on the top that says, what are your three goals? And my number one goal is to be loving, mm-hmm, you know, like be the best human I can be. Just right. be kind. You know, when I see that word for me, it's like, okay, be your best self. Assume the other person wants to be their best self, even if they're not.
Right.
You know, and it'll work out from there.
Right. So what's the most important thing people should consider when they're building their personal brand? What's a tip that that you can give them?
Great question. So most important thing, and there's a word that gets thrown around a lot, authentic.
Mm-hmm.
Authentic means different things to different people.
Right.
I like to say, you know, from your heart. You know, the thing that resonates with you so much, if you can get in touch with that, I call that the zone of genius. When you can do business from that place, you know, there's there's nothing that'll stop you. Hmm. If you can build your brand, your personal brand, your professional brand, your company brand, whatever brand it is that you're building, if you build it from that place, people will resonate with what you've got going on.
Absolutely. We get too heady in our brand. We lose all the realness of it all.
Sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah. So Grace, where can people learn more about you and your work?
Allaboutthatbrand.com.
Yes.
If you listen to podcasts, we're on syndicated on many channels. It's All About That Brand. I think those are the best two places. You can certainly hit me on LinkedIn. I probably got half a dozen responses this morning from the Oracle teams that we connected with yesterday, just completely people that I didn't even shake hands with or meet in the moment, but they felt comfortable enough to reach out on LinkedIn. So yeah.
Okay. Nice. The final question we always close with is what three pearls of wisdom do you want to leave with our audience today?
So number one, you already have a brand. You already have that brand cocktail. Your network is the one that experiences that brand and actually articulates it. So if they're not articulating it well, or what they're saying about you isn't what you want them to say, you're the driver of that bus. So you can redirect it. If they say you're never on time, well, maybe you start showing up 15 minutes early, over and over and over again. Maybe you post an article about being timely or how to get somewhere 30 minutes early to get your head in the game, something like that, right? You nice. Want to impress upon them the things you want them to remember about you.
Right. And I love this. It's, you know, what they're saying about you is really, you know, you have control of shifting that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Well, we're the only ones that do. I mean, the experience that people have about us personally or professionally is how we show up in those spaces. It's the thing that when you leave the room and somebody says, hey, who was that? What that person says about you after that question, that's your brand.
Brilliant.
Right? I think the third thing that I find with my clients is they don't see high enough of who they are. And let me give you an example. I've got a great friend, colleague, mastermind person. He is real estate agent, mortgage guy, vineyard owner. I mean, this guy, he's got, I don't know, I think he probably has 7 active businesses. He's reading the book about, you know, the importance of having multiple income streams.
Okay.
And he's constantly trying to shift his brand between, you know, what's making the most money, this and that and the other thing, and struggling with his position on LinkedIn. And, you know, if he just lifted his brand up to being the entrepreneur that he is, how he injects himself into all these different businesses. I mean, think Tom Shoes and Blake McCoskey.
Right.
He, as soon as that business got big enough to hire a CEO, he did. And then he went back to what he really was, which was a social entrepreneur.
Right.
So he'll always be the founder of Tom's, but he doesn't have to get bogged down in the CEO-ness of the business. He gets to go out and figure out what those little kids need next.
That's so cool. I love this a lot. This is a really good one for everybody to think about is, you know, how do you elevate your brand, how your personal brand, so that people, so that, you know, you're up above where, you know, the details of it.
Yeah. The job today, right? Whether it's a business or just your job, right? If you can lift above it, I'm convinced founderitis, right? This whole business about founders, they launch a company and they have a nervous breakdown when they try and bring in a CEO because they've collapsed who they are into that particular business.
Right.
And when you want to bring someone in to take that over, it feels like they're losing themselves.
Right. Right. So good. So good. Well, Grace, this was so much fun. It was fun to find all these threads of commonality. And I knew we had good threads of commonality before we jumped on the call, but I even know more now. So thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, Cammy, thank you so much for inviting me.
Yeah. Well, you have a good day and we'll hope to see you soon. I hope you liked this episode of Extraordinary Women Radio. If you did, please share this podcast with your own special tribe of women and help spread the love, the dreams, and the inspiration. Are you ready to raise up your voice, your visibility, and your business? I invite you to join the conversation in my Facebook group, Extraordinary Women Connect. This group brings together changemaker women entrepreneurs who want to elevate their business for impact. It is a place for powerful connections and collaborations. It is a place to be inspired, uplifted, and fired up for action. To learn more about my work that helps women entrepreneurs make heartfelt connections to mindful growth strategies, visit my website at cammygelner.com. Till next time, my friend, listen to your heart, follow your dreams, and be you.